Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're chatting on this Sunday afternoon before the Rockets take on the Toronto Raptors. I know there's going to be a lot of talk about that game in the coming hours, but for now, with the Rockets winners of 7 in a row, 18 of 20, 29-9 on the year in firm possession of a top 3 seed in the Western Conference, figured it was a good time to talk about a few bigger picture items and reflect on just what we've learned about this team through this hot stretch over the last month to 6 weeks. So to do that, one of the better big picture thinkers I can find on Rockets Twitter is David Wiener. You know him as Beam a Thug. He's a CBA expert, big-time Rockets fan, blogs at clutchfans.net. He's been on the show before, but it's been a while. So, David, welcome back, buddy.
Glad to be back, man.
Yeah, I think we can all agree, of course, that James Harden's an legitimate MVP candidate, probably the front runner at this point in the year. But where it gets really interesting with this Rockets team is who is their number two? Because there are so many options. And you've had this campaign for Trevor Ariza. It's Trevor Ariza hashtag NBA vote, which I know is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Not everyone seems to get that, because unfortunately on Twitter there are some people who seem to lack sarcasm. But, I enjoy it. And the thing with Trevor, you could make a lot of arguments for who the Rockets' number two is. I would say that Eric Gordon might be their second most important player because his skill set is so difficult to replicate. However, Ariza might be their second most valuable player based on the totality of his contributions. And I know you've thrown out a lot of stats on your Twitter, but just on this show, go ahead and make the case. Tell us why Trevor Ariza is having really a better season than anyone could have possibly imagined 2 or 3 months ago.
Sure. And yeah, what you said is totally right. That, I think Eric Gordon is certainly deserving of some all-star consideration as what I would agree is probably the second most accomplished player this season. But I think Trevor Ariza has had as much to do with the Rockets' success as anyone. He's second in the team in minutes. He's probably the team's best defensive player. Maybe either him or Beverly, who's having a resurgence this year defensively. And ESPN has a kind of proprietary stat, real plus minus, and real plus minus wins. And Trevor Ariza registers extraordinarily high in those metrics. He is 15th in the entire league in real plus minus and 13th in the league in RPM wins. So at least according to some of these advanced metrics, Trevor is one of the most valuable players in the entire league. Now, do I think he's one of the 12 best players in the Western Conference? Obviously not. But kind of the point of the NBA vote campaign for Trevor Ariza was more to get Rockets fans and, if people outside of Houston feel the same way, then that's gravy. But really to kind of bring the Rockets fans' attention just how valuable Trevor's been to the winning ways of this team this year.
Yeah, and I love it for that reason, because it's so easy to overlook him because he's not the bright and shiny new toy. Because we look at Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, they've had huge seasons and they're new, so it's easy to give them a lot of love and a lot of praise for the team's turnaround. He's not James Harden, he's not the MVP of the entire league. And to an extent, it feels like Trevor's been here a while, so I think some of his contributions we take for granted. But it's been a huge turnaround. I've had a lot of, I'd say, analytically minded guest on this show before the year who talked about his basically decline in defensive performance a year ago. And I remember a lot of people saying that, well, it could be just a culture thing. And, I mean, is that what it seems like? Is there anything better he's doing on the defensive end this year? Or is it just a matter of, well, the team's effort is up, his focus is up, so all of a sudden the results are a lot better?
I think there's a lot of the latter. I think watching the games last season, it looked like everyone on the team became disinterested in defense. I think, Trevor and Dwight were probably the two best defenders, but even they were kind of showing a little malaise as the year wore on. And you'd see spurts of it where Trevor wouldn't get back on in transition D as well as he normally does. And I think the whole team being rejuvenated has kind of mitigated any of those errors. And, Trevor, I think, has historically been just a tremendous defender. And, one of those kind of eye test examples is the Rockets tend to switch a lot defensively. And opponents tend to take advantage of the Rockets' defense by running enough pick and rolls to switch the worst defender onto their offensive option. And what Trevor has been tremendously good at is realizing when the opponent is doing this and making sure to shove his teammates back onto their mans instead of allowing for switches. Nene is notoriously bad at just switching automatically, even when he could get back to his man. And there'll be times you'll see Trevor just kind of shove Nene back onto his man to make sure that Trevor is on the primary offensive option, because that gives the Rockets the best chance to stop them.
Yeah, and I love the point you also made earlier about the minutes, because it's so easy to take that for granted. But his ability to play 44 minutes, the game against the Wizards last week when Bev didn't play, and if you throw Tyler Ennis out there against John Wall, you're almost going to be tanking the game. So to have the option, even on a given night, of throwing Ariza out there for 44 minutes, you don't want to do it with regularity, but certainly it had a huge deal to do with why the Rockets won that game. You could also go back to starting with the Denver game. He was coming off that game in Golden State. That entire team probably had about 3 hours worth of sleep. He had a, horrific bout with back spasms to where it looked like it was a pain for him to walk. And yet he didn't miss a game. So that kind of durability, I'm a big believer that setting that tone, the fact that the team's leaders like Trevor, like James Harden, never miss a game, that goes a big, that goes a long way towards the kind of success they're having and seeing this entire roster buy in. Of course, you can throw Pat Beverly in there as well, because right now Pat Beverly's wrist is barking at him on every single shot he takes. Yet for some reason, not only is he playing, he seems to actually be shooting threes better since he had that injury. To go back to the defensive thing, we talked a lot about Trevor. Another guy that you're a real champion of on Twitter, and I use on Twitter here because it's important, is Corey Brewer. And the reason I point out the on Twitter is because Corey seems to be everyone's favorite punching bag. We know he's not really a reliable three-point shooter, but all in all, he's been a pretty good defender this year, and even with his shooting limitations, a quality defensive option. I think it's pretty clear that that's why D'Antoni went to him as the starter for the two games that Beverly was out, because there's a trust factor with the coaching staff and Corey Brewer. And I think a lot of people on Twitter don't necessarily understand it, because they are just looking at the game from a beauty perspective. What makes this offense flow? But from a lot of the little stuff, a lot of the defense, I think there's some value to Corey Brewer that you pick up on that a lot of other people might not. So here on this show, make the case for Corey Brewer. Why is he still a viable, 15 to 20 minutes per game rotation player in the NBA?
Well, I will backtrack from the whole champion stance on Corey Brewer. I think relative to the mean, which seems to think that Corey Brewer is somewhere approaching the Antichrist, I would say he is a viable end-of-rotation option a winning team. Like you just mentioned, defensively, I think he's been a very good positive. There's not very many players who are 6'9 with long arms who can guard opposing point guards and shooting guards, which is why he's a viable stopgap starter when Beverly's out. Also because they want to keep Eric Gordon in his six-man role. It's not because they think Corey Brewer's one of the five best players when Beverly's out. He's been a plus defensively. He can get into passing lanes. He can disrupt opponents. He's very active defensively. I think he is he's cut back on his three-point shooting. His percentage is actually down from last season, but I think he knows when to pass on a three. He only shoots when he's totally wide open. He's been making the extra pass a little more than last year. I think his points and rebounds are up on a per-minute basis from last season. He plays within himself. Again, we're talking about a guy who is the 10th man on this team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in games when Patrick Beverley plays, meaning they have their full complement of backcourt players, he's only playing about 13 minutes a game, and some of that is even garbage time. So,
sure.
Of actual meaningful minutes, this is the guy who's giving you 10 to 12 minutes off the bench. And, you know, while I think the Rockets would ideally like to upgrade that, maybe at the trade deadline, you can certainly get by with Corey Brewer as your 10th man, and I think he gives you some positives. Not a very good player. He's really fallen off, but I don't think he deserves kind of the whipping boy status he's gotten on Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way, because it's pretty clear that they have cut his role a lot. He's no longer the guy that he was 2 years ago. They're counting on him for 25 minutes a night, but for a limited role. And, you know, if Beverly or Ariza has a little issue, a fill-in that you can trust in a defensive end, there's value there. He is who he is, but I think the Rockets done a good job of playing within his limitations. And, well, Corey himself has done a good job of playing within those limitations as well.
And I will say this, that I think part of the reason people are so down on Corey is that there's a lot of, you know, going back to the shiny new thing, although he's not really new, is that there are a lot of people out there that would just much rather see KJ McDaniels.
Sure.
The much, much more exciting player, just, you know, the wild dunks, the fantastic highlight reel blocks. And I think going into the season, KJ was playing really well, and I think it was a real coin flip. Corey was playing well, too, so it was a real coin flip for the coaching staff to on who they were going to trust. I think they just decided that they trusted Brewer a little bit more, had a little more veteran experience. And then since then, KJ's really not played well in the limited minutes he's gotten. You know, even if it's mostly garbage time, he's just gone out and played poorly. And, you know, whereas maybe if he had played well, KJ could have supplanted Corey by now in the rotation. I think KJ's done nothing to make his case to belong in the rotation at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair as well, because what limited opportunities that KJ has gotten in the last couple of months, he has not taken advantage of them at all. Before we get to your specialty, which is, of course, cap minutia, talking about the trade deadline, future off seasons, did have one more role player topic I was going to throw at you, and this is just on the spur of the moment. But you had a great tweet the other night when I posted the wide video from Press Row of the winning play at the end of the Thunder game when Harden dumped it to Nene, who got fouled under a second left, to basically win the game. You made a great point that if you freeze the video at the moment that Harden's releasing the pass and Nene has just a completely unobstructed roll to the bucket, there's a guy who's guarding Ryan Anderson in the corner who easily could have slid over. But the fear of Ryan Anderson is so much as a shooter that even though, you know, you have Nene unobstructed rolling towards the basket, that guy was still terrified of leaving Ryan Anderson in the corner. So make the case, even though I know Anderson's productivity tends to run very hot and cold, we use the hashtag Road Ryan for a reason, make the case for why, even if he's only scoring, say, 10 points on a given night, why Anderson's, basically his range, his ability to space the floor, is so important towards what Harden, Gordon, and the rest of the team is doing on offense.
Sure. Now, you know, I think a lot of fans are a little wary of the amount of money the Rockets are paying Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, truth be told, I wish they would have gotten him for a little less, but I think they wouldn't have gotten him for a penny less than they paid him. And he's a great fit on this team. But, you know, to your point, Anderson has, you know, what a lot of the stat people that are a lot more knowledgeable in that area than I am called a gravitational pull, mm-hmm. which is the unwillingness of defenders to sag off of him in offense. And, you know, as you see, Ryan, oftentimes he'll pull up, you know, 4 feet behind the three-point line and switch one. And teams are wary of that. And you stick him in the corner, you stick him up the top, that creates a lot of space for Harden and the other Rockets to operate. And, you know, even on nights when Ryan isn't scoring, whether his shot is off or he's just not attempting a lot, the reason he might not be attempting a lot of shots is they have a guy all over Ryan who's far away from the basket, is not clogging up the lane, and is just creating wide open spaces for Harden to drive. So those nights when Harden's getting those layups, that you're like, how is that so easy? Well, a lot of that's due to the fact that Ryan Anderson's man isn't in the paint. He's not sagging off and double teaming Harden. On the play that you mentioned, the winning, I guess, Nene free throws, but the play that set it up, Jeremy Grant was tied to Anderson's hip, afraid to leave him. Yep. And so when Nene finds himself wide open, rolling to the bucket, Grant's a step or two late because he wasn't sagging off of Anderson.
Yep.
He gets there a little bit late and ends up fouling Nene. If Anderson is just one of the three-point shooters the Rockets had last year, Grant probably sags off a little more, is there on time, and either draws a charge or cleanly blocks Nene, and who knows what happens in that game. So that's one example of where Anderson's really, really helpful for this Rockets offense.
Yeah.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Tried to spin it forward a little bit because for this show, we're going a little more big picture. We're almost at the halfway point as we record on this Sunday afternoon. Rockets are 29-9, getting ready for the Toronto game. We know what the strengths and weaknesses are of this team by now, and there's been a lot made on what they might do by the February trade deadline. What we've heard the most is the need for another big, and I know they're probably going to get Clint Capella back in the next couple of weeks, but even when they do, you've still seen stretches where they could use another big. However, you've also seen stretches where they might could use another wing player. Now, I know some people say point guard, but really, with how the Rockets' offense is run, it could be a point guard. It could just be a classic 3-and-D type, the Beverly injury being the latest kind of moment that you say, well, maybe this is a little thin because the Beverly injury shows you're one injury away from having to potentially play Tyler Ennis, which is not good at all. So I guess this is kind of a two-pronged question for you. First, what do you see the biggest need as? Is it the extra big or an extra wing? And secondly, from a cap standpoint, what can the Rockets do if the deal does not involve Corey Brewer? Because obviously, you know, the Kosta Koufos being the most rumored, of course, if Corey Brewer's in the deal, his $8 million salary plus filler, you can easily get to say $10 or $11 million. That's pretty easy. However, if it's not involving Corey Brewer, you're a little more limited. Of course, you have KJ McDaniels at like 3.3, and you might can get with KJ and fillers to $5 or $6 million. But I'm curious, A, from a basketball standpoint, what you see the needs are, and B, from a math standpoint, other than Brewer, what's the highest the Rockets can reasonably go if they're shopping for a role player upgrade?
Sure. So on the first part, I'd say, personally, I kind of like the current stable of bigs. Mm-hmm. Yes, they don't have maybe quite the level of rebounding that you'd like, but I think between healthy Capella, hopefully, Nene and Harrell, you have three pretty good options that also give you different looks. Also, don't sleep on Chinadu Onuaku. We're in this for the long haul. We're in this for a deep playoff push. It is at least possible that Onuaku might be ready to at least be like a third stringer come playoff time, kind of like what Capella did his rookie year. I think the Rockets probably viewed Onuaku as further along when they drafted him than Capella was when they drafted Capella. So he at least gives you a potential additional option there. So you're looking at four centers. would I object to them getting in another quality big? Absolutely not, because especially with Anderson's health, it'd be nice to have maybe a guy who could come in and play the four or the five, so you don't have to stress Decker out too much. The kind of player I personally would like to see the Rockets go for is kind of a fourth guard, someone with kind of a 3-and-D type player who can guard opposing point guards, who doesn't need to play a ton of minutes, isn't going to gripe about that, can maybe reduce Harden's, Gordon's, and Beverly's minutes, you know, doesn't have to play 30 minutes a game, but maybe comes in, takes Corey Brewer's spot in the rotation, can give you 20, 22 quality minutes. A guy who is somewhat realistic, but probably a pipe dream, who is the kind of player I'd be looking for, is someone like Gary Harris from Denver. Hmm. He's a tremendous young defensive player, is a pretty good three-point shooter, gets out there and hustles. My guess is Denver is not going to give him up unless he's packaged for, you know, an all-star caliber player. But Denver does have a lot of really talented young guards, and that would be the one I'd want to try to get. As far as Map goes, yeah, if they're going to keep their core players intact, but they're not giving
right.
up Harden, Anderson, Gordon, Ariza, Beverly, and they want to try to bring in a high-salary player, they pretty much have to use Brewer's salary. And that creates problems if you want to get a really good player because Brewer's contract is guaranteed for about $7.6 million next year, and a lot of teams just don't want to take on that salary. They might not balk at this season's salary. It's just next season
right.
might be a problem. Unless a team is willing to take on Brewer's contract, or you're trading for a guy who, you know, like a Kostakoufos, whose contract is you know, somewhat reasonable, but it's not like you're getting a steal there. You know, you're probably going to have to go with KJ McDaniels. Tyler Ennis makes $1.7 million,
yeah.
Which is, I know a lot of people on Twitter have been saying, oh, let's just cut Ennis. I think they're going to keep him around, you know, if for no other reason than he's salary filler until the trade deadline.
Yep.
So then you're looking at probably a player, you know, around mid-level, something about, you know, $6 or $7 million as far as the type of salary you'd be looking at in a trade that does not involve Brewer.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at as well, looking at the various trade machines, because yeah, Ennis's $1.7 million is really helpful, because if for some reason you can't get a team to take on Brewer for the reason you said, because of that guaranteed year next year, then yeah, besides KJ McDaniels at 3.3, you have a ton of guys that are at the bare minimum, and Tyler Ennis, even at 1.7, that goes a whole heck of a lot further than Kyle Wilcher or Bobby Brown would, so yeah.
Also, and one quick aside on Ennis, people forget Ennis is still only 22 years old. The Rockets might legitimately want to give this kid through the end of the season to see if he improves much before they just totally cut ties with him. So, while I definitely think they'll keep him in at the bare minimum as salary filler through the deadline, you know, I don't think they're necessarily just going to give up on him. They might try to see what they have in him through the end of the season, maybe even into the summer, if he's willing to play summer league, things like that, that he might be a guy they still have interest in, but I just don't think, I don't agree with people that are so quick to just cut him.
Yeah, I don't see any point in cutting him, because, yeah, that salary figure is helpful. I'm skeptical on his long-term future here because of course, them not picking up his third-year option. But at the same time, I mean, if they like the fit and his value craters enough, you could still keep him on basically a developmental deal going forward, that sort of thing. But, so yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, first and foremost, I'm thinking in terms of the trade value. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head as far as the trade deadline, because to me, the most likely deals are the smaller ones. We've heard a lot about the bigs, but I'm kind of with you. I mean, you look at what's happened in the past week with the Beverly injury, and all of a sudden, all it takes is one little nick like that, and that backcourt seems really thin. Gary Harris, I know that's probably a long shot. I do like that. I'm curious, even though he's older, I'm curious to see if they kick the tires on Jarrett Jack, because Jarrett Jack is a guy who, at least if you believe our boy CyberX, that the Rockets have had interest in the past. I think he'd fit in well in the locker room. But someone at that, you know, guard position, just to, you know, give you a little bit more insulation before having to go to the Tyler Ennis, Bobby Brown tier. before we move on to the offseason to wrap it up in the CBA, one more trade thing. You're hearing a lot of people throw out the possibility and wonder about Paul Millsap or bigger deal. To me, I would never rule anything out with Daryl Morey. I think we know Daryl enough to never do that. But to me, it seems rather unlikely because the only way you're going to get to Millsap or any player of that stature is if you move a core piece, which would have to be either Anderson or Gordon, probably Anderson. And at this point, unless it's just a phenomenal deal, a clear all-star level player, and I'm not sure Millsap is that, I just don't see the value in breaking up what they have right now, unless it's for something that's, you know, clearly that second all-star piece. Is that kind of where you are?
Yep, I agree completely. I think, number one, things are going so well, you don't want to disrupt both what you're doing basketball-wise and team chemistry by moving a core piece. I mean, heck, we you know, multiple people have come out in you know, recent months saying how the main harm that the Ty Lawson trade ended up doing is everyone in the locker room believed in Patrick Beverly as this team's point guard, and when they replaced him with Lawson, it really kind of killed chemistry. So I don't think you want to do that again here, moving a core piece. Also, I think if you were to trade a player like Anderson just months after he signed as a free agent, I think the team loses a lot of credibility with free agents in the future, that they would have a home in Houston. So, and then the fact that you're just not going to be able to make salaries work otherwise for a guy like Millsap or someone of his, you know, similar level of salary, I just don't see a big move coming. And I don't think they need a big move. I think they're playing great with the team they have, which is kind of almost an unfamiliar territory where, you know, this front office would be, you know, satisfied with the status quo, but I think they should be.
Yeah. And speaking of the need to make any bigger moves, one thing that you've told me in recent weeks, and I'm spinning this forward now to the offseason, not just the trade deadline, but we have the new collective bargaining agreement. We have a little bit more clarity on what future offseasons are going to look like. And one thing that you've kind of been throwing cold water on is the notion that the Rockets can easily have max cap room next July. I know it's not impossible, but there are certain things with the new CBA, the higher cap hits for the rookies, the higher cap hits for the extra roster slots, which, while not impossible, make it fairly challenging, I would say, to have max cap room in July. So while the Rockets, I'm sure, are going to be swinging for the fences in the offseason, as they always are, it seems like there's a better chance that they do it via trade than via just shedding salaries to get to max level. I know we've talked about that before, but for our listeners, I was curious if you could just elaborate a little bit more on what their position is and what this new CBA means for that.
Sure, and I think you touched on a couple of really good points. You know, the new CBA has not officially been written and finalized yet, so things could change, or the public's current understandings of some of the nuanced changes may further change between now and when the CBA is officially finalized. But, you know, as it relates to the Rockets, some of the bigger things that impact their cap situation this summer and beyond is that the league minimums have substantially increased, and which I think is a great positive across the board for all players. And what that has resulted in is, like you said, first-round rookie scale going up, so the cap hold for the Rockets' first-round draft pick this year, which right now will be in the 20s, that's gone up a lot more than it would have otherwise. The players currently on minimum salaries or otherwise very low salaries are all going to go up because, for instance, Montrezl Harrell was, before the new CBA, was scheduled to make more than the minimum. But because the minimum's gone up so much, his salary for next season is actually below the new minimum. So kind of the rising tide lifts all boats. So Harrell's salary goes up. Onuaku's salary goes up. Wilcher's salary goes up. And then, as you mentioned, the incomplete roster charges, which is equivalent to the rookie minimum. Those, anytime you have less than 12 players on your roster in the offseason, you have to tack in these incomplete roster charges, which eat into your cap room. Those are going up about 50% from where they were before, actually a little bit more. So the Rockets' cap room is going to go down probably another $3 million or so from where they were planning it to go, you know, a few months ago. So where that leaves the Rockets is, and I try to put this in terms of obviously, Daryl Morey can make a trade to open up Mark Capram, and it's impossible to account for trades because there's millions of permutations. So if the Rockets just waived all the players with non-guaranteed contracts, renounced the rights to free agents, even if they just said goodbye to their first-round pick, just gave it away for nothing, if they declined the team option on KJ McDaniels, you're looking at about $13 million or so in cap room. Now, I think an obvious trade that a lot of people are anticipating is the Rockets will try to dump Corey Brewer. Well, even if you dump Corey Brewer for nothing, which itself is going to be a tall task, now you're looking at a little less than $20 million. Mm-hmm. Right there, that might be a good area for them to fall into. They can go after another kind of Anderson or Gordon caliber free agent. Not a max guy, but another really good core piece they can add and still keep all of their current core in place. But now, if you want to try to take that to, you know, even further, trying to create max room, even if they then dumped Trevor Ariza for nothing, you're only looking at about $26 million. That's enough to for you to get the lowest tier max player, so a guy like 0 to 6 years of experience. But most of those guys are restricted free agents, so like a Nerlens Noel or a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Those are the kinds of players you'd be looking at, and it's unlikely you're going to get them, even if you clear the room for them, because their teams might just match. Gordon Hayward is the most popular name out there as far as the guy the Rockets would love to get. But under the new CBA, he's a kind of a second-tier max guy. His max is $31 million. So as I said, even if you dump Brewer in a reason for nothing, and you're really going bare bones at this point, you're still a good $5 million shy of giving Gordon Hayward a max. So you'd probably have to move a guy like Anderson to create room. And I don't know whether they would do that or not. But, you know, you never know. Maybe they move on from Anderson or Gordon or something like that to create max room. But more likely than not, the Rockets will either settle into that $13 to $20 million range and go after a really good complementary piece, or they might be able to operate above the cap if you add in all their salary cap exceptions.
Yes.
They may be able to stay just above the cap, make trades, maybe they package Brewer and some additional salary and bring in another high-priced player via trade, and then they'll have access to what are now substantially increased salary cap exceptions. The mid-level exception has now gone up to above $8 million, which is a nice sum of money there to go after a quality player. And then the biannual exception is going up to above $3 million. So you might have those exceptions available to you to bring in additional players, including what I know a lot of people are going to cringe. You probably know the name I'm about to say. With the mid-level exception, they might have finally be able to bring over Sergio Yule.
Oh, wow.
Who I think, again, kind of along the lines of that fourth guard position that I would really love to fill, I think he would be perfect. But, you know, I know eyes are rolling all over the place now when I bring that up, but that's another option.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that a lot myself because some of the deals we've heard about with them, we know that the Demo deal, think back to the original deal they matched from Brooklyn, which essentially, as I look at it, was basically 2 years, $17 million. That's shows the kind of willingness they have to pay for this particular team. Kufus, if they were to bring him in, and I know there's no deal imminent, but there's been a lot of smoke about it, that's another guy at $8 million per. So when you hear rumors like that, it makes me wonder if they would consider operating above the cap, because clearly they can, and if they operate above the cap, number one, they do have several trade assets in the last year of their contracts, so you would be able to be a player that way, and the exceptions, just as you know, the cap is going up, the exceptions are going to go up too, so if Houston is seen as a good destination, and halfway through the year, it's tough to imagine it not being, then yeah, there's a big case for how Houston, you know, with a bunch of expiring contracts and rising exceptions, could still have a pretty good summer, even if they operate as an above-the-cap team. So I've been thinking about that.
And I will say this, I really do like where the Rockets are operating, that I think there's that zone where you could go either direction that not many teams are operating within, because which I think is the ideal place to be operating. You want to keep your options open. And especially under the new CBA, I won't get into too much detail about the designated veteran exception, but the new rules will make it even less likely that superstars change teams in the future. So the DeMarcus Cousins of the world, Paul Georges of the world, even Gordon Hayward, although we'll see what happens with his contract, they're less likely to leave. So the days of just operating so that you'll have max cap room every summer is not necessarily the best way to go, because the odds of you getting that superstar are not very high. There's not very many Kevin Durant 2016s or LeBron James 2010 and 2014s. So you want to be able to fill your roster with good players instead of stripping down in anticipation of max cap room.
Yeah, I would agree with that. David, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate you always coming on this show. You've been a big advocate for us, so I really appreciate that. Before you go, toss out your Twitter handle, where people can find your CBA breakdowns, basically anything you want to talk about, anything we haven't already covered with this Rockets team before they go into this big Toronto game later today.
Sure. My Twitter handle's at BimaThug, BimaThug. I promise you, it is nothing. There's no machismo involved with that name. It was just something I got stuck with after 20 years. But I write for ClutchFans.net. You can go there and find some of my prior work. My next salary cap update probably won't happen until after the new CBA comes out, because I'm going to want to get a better understanding of some of the additional nuances that haven't quite come to light yet. Trevor Ariza, hashtag NBA vote.
There you go. David, thank you so much for the time. I'll talk with you again soon, okay?
Take care, man.
You too. That's David Wiener, ClutchFans.net. Great asset to the Rockets community. Tremendous, well-informed fan. If you're not already following him at BimaThug, I don't know what you're doing with your life, but you absolutely should. He's a resource that Rockets fans have to have, because not only is he a good advocate for, you know, the team, and I love talking to him about some of the more, you know, unsung heroes, the Trevor Arizas, the Ryan Andersons, because so many of us get caught up in all of James Harden's ridiculous stat lines, Eric Gordon's insane three-point shooting, that a lot of stuff can fall beneath the radar. And with David, his radar finds everything. So he's a great resource to talk about some of the guys that might otherwise fall in between the cracks. Beyond that, he is one of the smartest guys on the collective bargaining agreement and salary cap info that I know. So as far as how the new CBA impacts the Rockets, I think he's a great resource to talk about that with. And I really thought that he made a good point about the potential for the Rockets to operate as an above-the-cap team. Now, I don't think they have to commit to it, because clearly there is a route where if you dealt Brewer, if you turned down the options, and you know you could work on doing something with Ryan Anderson, then yeah, if all goes well, you could create max salary cap room if there's a max free agent that you know wants to come to Houston. But perhaps the more likely play is to simply operate as an above-the-cap team. Keep this team together. If they continue to be a 60-plus win team, I don't know why you wouldn't. Keep them together, and you'll have a lot of expiring contracts that would be attractive on the trade market to further bolster the team, and you would have all access to every exception, which you could use for Sohiro Yule or a lot of other pieces that are going to want a piece of the pie. Because if the Rockets are a destination franchise, and through half the year they're absolutely on pace to be that, a lot of teams are going to want to play here with this system, James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, then all of a sudden, just having all of those exceptions is enough. Think about the guys the Warriors got after Kevin Durant, who were willing to play for basically nothing. I think we're seeing that more and more as salaries rise to these astronomical levels. All of a sudden, the importance of raw cap room tends to decrease a little bit, because even the exceptions, the mid-level room, people are willing to take a little bit of a discount to play for really good, really fun teams, because the quote-unquote discount is still absurdly high on a, you know, just raw cash, raw money level. So the Warriors and other teams took advantage of it. The Spurs did as well last summer. Hopefully the Rockets will be in position, assuming this type of year continues for the second half of the year, to take advantage of it in the summer of 2017, just as the Warriors and Spurs did in 2016. Anyway, on that happy note, I'll wrap up because, well, we're about to get back into the nitty-gritty of Rockets basketball. They have the big game against the Raptors coming up later today. They're then home for the Charlotte Hornets on Tuesday, at Minnesota on Wednesday, and home for Memphis on Friday. So it's going to be a busy week, four Rockets games. So if you stick here with Locked on Rockets, we will have you covered on a game-by-game basis. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please do that, at Ben Dubose. As I said earlier, if you want to follow David on Twitter, do that, at BimaThug. And if you want to follow the show on Twitter, it's at Locked on Rockets. You can also subscribe to Locked on Rockets at iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you consume your media, just search for Locked On Rockets and you will find us. And don't forget, you can also email us at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions for me, anything that you want to know about the team, suggestions, just let us know, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. For now, I'll sign off and get ready for the Rockets-Toronto game. We'll be talking with you a little bit later today or tomorrow about that one. For now, enjoy this podcast with David. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll be talking with you again very soon.